I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Is there any discussion concerning the proposed agenda? If not, is there a motion to approve?
I make a motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
The agenda is approved. Is there any public comment at this point? I don't know that we have a sign-up sheet, but anyone in the public free comment at this time? I guess not, so we'll move on to the consent agenda. The consent agenda is routine matters that would be enacted by a single motion with no separate discussion unless a commissioner would request separate discussion. We have three items on the consent agenda today. Approval of the special meeting minutes from a special meeting on December 20th, 2017, and on another special meeting on January 12th, and also approval of warrants. Is there any discussion concerning the consent agenda?
I move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Motion passed. Next would be our financial report. This would be 2018 year-end financials, and I see we have Dennis with us today to walk us through how we did last year.
Yes. We're not through the end of 2018 yet, but we will review 2017.
Can you leave the little stopper down so that people know it's still okay to come in? Thank you.
There we go. Okay. All right. Dennis Krieger, CPA from Parsons CPA Group. We are going to review the year end of December 31st, 2017, and walk you through the financial statements. And they are in the package. I know back on page, starting on page 33. Table of contents, just to reiterate, every time I meet with you, I remind you that these financial statements are prepared on a cash basis several years ago. Report changed from full accrual accounting to cash basis, i.e. only presenting the cash accounts at the behest of the Washington State Auditor. They were consistent that as a small port that you could do that, and so as you might recollect, the primary effect of that was to remove the port's assets, particularly the docks and land, et cetera, the assets that were on the books. We still keep track of that as required by the Washington State Auditor. However, they are reflected in these financial statements. So, sound like a broken record each time, but just like to reiterate. Okay. The report you see here, this is a compilation report. We do not audit these numbers. These numbers will provide the basis from which the Washington State Auditor will do their statutory examination, which has been going on for 2 months. But at the same time, they expect you and us to prepare the financial statements in accordance with the bar, Washington State Bar's manual, and for cash basis court districts, and that's what we follow. And sometimes we get some input from that they don't necessarily like what's in the bar's manual, but we follow it anyhow, because that's, if it ever came push and shove, we want to be able to say, it's your book, it's your rules, here they are. So, with regard to the financial position of the port as of December 31st, we have the statement of assets, liability, and equity. And as of December 31st, 2017, the total assets of the port, cash only, $2,154,737, page 2 of our report. With regard to the liabilities and equity, there are some normal withheld taxes, $35,000. We have the GO bonds payable, $1 million. And total liabilities of $1,035,000. So the equity, assets minus liabilities on a cash basis of the court, are $1,119,000. again, I want to just remind everyone here, if we remove approximately $10 million worth of assets when we switched from accrual basis accounting to cash basis accounting. So, the assets still
exist. Excuse me just a minute. Dennis, would you, yeah, please. So it's all still open. Thank you. It doesn't have to be all the way, just a little bit. I'm sorry, go ahead, Dennis.
Okay, so again, just these only reflect the cash accounts. The next page, we start looking at what happened during the year. Page 3 of the financial statements is the statement of revenue and expenses, actual from 12 months ended December 31st compared to what the board adopted as a budget initially November of 2016, and then amended, I believe, in April of 2017. So, as you can see, under operating revenues, if you go down about 8th of the page, we have operating revenues relative to budget within $672, and that's usually that close, as you can see. We'll talk about what happened during the month of December. However, overall, your budgeting relative to budget was quite fortuitous, I guess you would say.
And skill.
There you go. And of course, there's many factors that go into that. That's just the way that the numbers actually came out. You're at $1,480,330. And back when we get to page 6 of the financial report, we'll go through the details of the budget versus actual of the operating revenue accounts. That's on page 6. Under operating expenses, when we go down and look at the actual versus budget, go to the bottom there, $2,992,000 versus $2,779,000, over budget by $212,500. And I highlighted the major negative variance items that we talked about, or I talked about in the quarter. We talked about the lawsuit, $166,000, legal expenses, $31,000 over budget. Sound gun repair expense, $9,600. Also, I would point out that we also have consulting fees, $26,872. All those items primarily make more than account for the operating expenses being over budget. But of course, the lawsuit was the singular most significant item. With regard to non-operating revenues, again, back to page 6, we'll see what those components are. Again, we're just comparing things to what the budget, which again was the commissioner's expectation back last October, that then was adjusted during April of 2017. Okay. So, and again, you were, with regard to offering revenues, you were $23,000 better than the budgeted amount. So, when you look at the net loss there, what I really want to point out is that, well, yes, $1,294,000, but under the cash basis of accounting that you're following, the rebuild of the marina, covered mortgage, plus the new office building, those expenditures, those items are treated as expenses on a cash basis. Of course, they're really assets with regard to financial accounting, but that's not what you're following. So you take the net loss of $1,294,000, add back the $1.3 million spent on capital expenditures, actually you have a cash basis profit of about $70,000. So, yes, the numbers, they look staggering. However, that money was spent on improving and maintaining the assets of the port, and it's just how those assets are presented under your method of account. Which again, I'd like to reiterate, this was nothing that we dreamed up. The state auditor at a conference told your commissioners you should be on the cash basis. Most small corps like yourself are, and so that's why you changed about 3 years ago. So sometimes I sound like a broken record, but I think it's important to emphasize those things. The next page is simply a comparison of the month of December this year versus the month of December last year. And if you look at operating revenues, the revenues are over budget for the, I mean, are higher than last year's amount by about $27,000. And what happened during the month of December was that you received your $35,000 per RIF grant for the reimbursement of costs that you had been spending during a long period of time, actually. So that primarily accounts for that difference. If you look at the other items, the expenses, when you go down to operating expenses, are $12,654, less than the amount a year ago. And again, if you look at the prior item most significant was the employee medical last year versus this year. Non-operating revenues, if you look there, those are basically back to the, we can go back and look at those in a moment on page 7, I believe it is. But you have a net loss for the month of $44,635. Last year was $82,000, and the difference is $37,000. The curve grant was $35,000, basically accounts for that difference. So that was simply December this year versus December last year. The next page has what I think is one of the most beneficial reports. We like to provide accounts, like to provide comparative information always. How do we do this year versus last year? This is comparing the 12 months ended December 31st, 2017 versus the 12 months ended December 31st, 2016. And again, under operating revenues, if you look up there, $45,000 more than last year. And there's a number of pieces why. But again, the curb grant in miscellaneous income that exists this year did not exist last year. And that primarily accounts for the difference. But however, there, again, you look at there's many pieces to that, and we'll see that when we get back to looking at page 6. With regard to operating expenses this year versus last year, again, if you look at almost $3 million of operating expenses, and last year almost $1.6 million, an increase of $1,400,000. Well, what are those things? Now that we have a full year, you know, behind us, well, you've got $1.1 million of increase in capital expenditures this year versus last year. We also have the lawsuit, we didn't have that last year, $166,000. And then you have the employee medical, which went up by $14,000. Down below, we have salaries and wages, which were the subject of a budget amendment last April of $64,000, repairs and maintenance, $18,000, et cetera. And then that was all offset by the fact that you did not have the temporary agency labor, which I believe was records request things last year, $48,000 going the other way. When you add all that up, it comes up to, it accounts for $1,352,000 of the increase. So those six items basically account for what the most of the increase was. And again, it's the capital expenditures and the lawsuit that really drove those expenditures. Non-operating revenues, again, pretty close to last year, and we'll look at those in a moment. So we get back to the net income for the year, net loss, $1,294,000, but we already talked about adding back the purchase of capital assets of $1.3 million. So basically, there was a cash basis profit because that $1,366,000 was, again, spent on assets of the port. Now, we look at some of the details here of the revenue accounts in particular. Page 6 of the financial statement shows the revenues compared to budget, and you can now see within the different line items is what the different categories of the variances were. That's the far right column. And user charges for the marina, we talked about transient mortgage before, and the base rate mortgage book with all the construction, et cetera. It makes sense that your mortgage charges, you did not have all the slips available. Parking, again, was significantly over budget. There's apparently the demand for the lot usage continues to grow. That was $34,000 over budget, and we've talked about the Hill House rentals situation. Didn't get started as early as had been planned. And so basically, though, that was $28,535 over budget. Fuel. Last year, you basically, you made, you, I know you base the budget for fuel on what has been happened in 2016, which was extraordinary, what you really have, when I look at your fuel this year, on a cash basis for the full year, it makes a lot of sense to me when I look at it and see a 10% margin on it. And that's really what you have. The net on the gas, $53,592 versus sales of $540,000 is a 10% margin. And historically, that's about what the port has done since it, in a normal type year. Then down below, non-operating revenues and expenses, you can see the different pieces there. I point out property tax receipts right on budget, essentially $196,915. Interest was less than budgeted because the project didn't get started as early as it was, and interest rates did not rise as much as it was originally anticipated. So, anyhow, these are the drivers of what the actual amounts compared to, again, what your expectations were as court commissioners, again, October of 2016, and April is adjusted in April of 2017. Next page, again, same line items, but comparing it to the month of December, comparing this year versus last year, bringing the user charges virtually overall the same. Property rentals up $3,940. Gas sales, this is an anomaly of being on a cash basis. If you pay for gas that's sitting in the tanks, even though it hasn't been sold yet, that can create a loss during the month, and that's certainly what would have happened during the month of December. But again, if you look at the prior page, gas margins, after looking at the full year, even on the cash basis, not accounting for inventories, it does tend to even out and give you the true picture, and a 10% margin on your gas is reasonable. Down below, we've got the interest expense for the month, and there was none last year because we hadn't borrowed on the GO bonds, so that makes sense. So, again, this is a comparative one-month income statement this year versus last year. Next page, again, we're just looking at the revenue accounts now. We're comparing this year, 12 months versus 12 months last year. And again, you can see the different line items comparing to each other. Marina user charges up by $9,428. Parking and property rentals, $29,000 more than last year. You'll see that the fuel sales compared to last year less. And again, if you buy gas when the price of gas is falling, the price high last year was an extraordinary year, 2016 that is, whereas I would consider 2017 10% margin a normal year. And then down below, again, we've got the non-operating revenues, again, compared to 2016. We've got interest expense this year, and then last year, property tax receipts, again, the same amount. So these are just, again, breaking out the different revenue accounts that are on the financial statements back on page 3. Last page is what we do to make sure that we haven't missed anything. We take the cash and investment accounts at the end of November. Then we account for the change in liabilities. We use the track of net loss for December, which is on page 4, and that should equal our cash and investments as of December 31st, 2017, $2,154,000. And if we did our job right, that would tie right in the balance sheet. It does, I checked before, so that's how we make sure everything is accounted for on a cash basis. So.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? The commissioners or the
I did have yeah. a couple of questions. They're Fire. Pretty small, but still sure. interesting to me. One is the interest, which comes up in a couple of different places, and I'd like to understand better our interest expense.
Okay. Your interest expense is on the GO bonds that were issued, $1 million, and they have data that wasn't all drawn at once. And that's paid to Kitsap Bank. And so, of course, it's monthly now that you're paying monthly, and then started out smaller, but now it's going up, and interest rates are going up slightly.
Okay. And the other question may be more of an operational question for Jim, which has to do with the cost of retail sales, i.e. the port promotional items. And I know that the month, the point at which you restock, you have a big cost, and et cetera, and it evens out over a period of time. Could, have there been changes in that? Are there changes in what you're planning to do?
There really isn't at this point, but that's only probably a third of that. Ice is a huge thing. We sell so much ice, and that fluctuates with the season. So that's all included, whether it's ball caps or ice, it's all under that retail sales category. I don't know the actual breakout. Maybe Juanita at some point can show you what that breakout is. But we really haven't bought a lot of promotional wear in a while, except for supplying staff and boat show stuff that will be coming up.
Okay, thank you. Those are my two questions.
Any other questions on the financial report? As long as we're in a financial mode, then we'll move along on our action items. We have three resolutions, and the cumulative effect of these three resolutions is to recognize the end of one commissioner's term and the beginning of another commissioner's term. The banks and financial institutions require a resolution of the governing board to authorize signatures for checks and other transfers. So we have three resolutions here that would, in each case, remove Commissioner Walt Elliott since his term has expired and replace him with Commissioner Laura Grunvall, who has just joined us this year. And unless there is individual discussion about the three resolutions, one is to update the Kitsap County Treasurer's Office Deposit Account Signature Card, Second is to update the deposit account signature card with Columbia Bank, which is the clearinghouse bank, as I recall, for the county. And the third is to update the account signature card filed with Kitsap Bank, which we use for our local deposits in Kingston. And also, I guess, with our general obligation law. So unless there is some discussion with respect to any one of those three, I would entertain a combined motion to authorize, to approve all three of those resolutions and adopt them.
I would move that we approve all three of these resolutions as presented in one motion.
Am I supposed to second it when my name's on it?
Mm-hmm. Yep, you can do that.
Okay, I second it.
Okay, moved and seconded that resolutions number 01012018, 01022018, and 01032018 be adopted. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Those resolutions are adopted. The next resolution, 01042018, is a resolution to amend the delegation of authority. For those in the audience here, the resolution of authority is the document by which the commission, which is the only one that's authorized to act for the port, delegates certain authorities to the executive director so that he or she can carry on the day-to-day business of the port, hiring and paying people and paying bills, things of that nature. Jim, would you like to kind of walk us through what your thinking is on the revised?
This resolution and delegation of authority was originally signed in 2015. In that, there were the policy was is to allow the executive director to expend funds up to $5,000 without prior commission approval, provided that he did alert the commissioners to those expenditures. Since 2015, and a lot of the projects we're working on, $5,000 doesn't buy much anymore. And since we're on a monthly basis of meetings, although we can call special meetings, this document takes my spending authority to $10,000. There are a few typos that were corrected from the 2015, but other than that, it's substantially complete with the change of a $10,000 threshold versus $5,000.
So it's essentially the same delegation of authority with that change from 5,000 to 10,000.
Nothing else has changed.
I move that we adopt resolution number 0104-2018 as presented.
I second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. I have a couple of comments. And maybe I get hyper-technical sometimes. As a resolution to amend the existing delegation of authority, but it doesn't rescind or replace the existing one. Technically, there could be two resolutions in effect at the same time, which shouldn't cause anyone confusion, but knowing lawyers as I do, I'm sure someone could make something of that. So if you would accept this as a friendly amendment, the resolution would be to rescind the existing and replace with this newer resolution, or this newer delegation of authority.
What motion?
That's a friendly amendment. If
accepted. but can I ask the legal question, which is what is the difference between resolve to amend and rescind and replace?
Resolve to amend implies that you're amending an existing document, but unless you specify this paragraph is removed and this paragraph replaces it,
I see.
You in effect then have amended the first one by adding the second one onto it.
Got it. Okay.
And if they have conflicting or inconsistent terms.
Yeah, I get it. Okay, thanks.
So we can prepare a new resolution and have it in your boxes for signature. There's no rush on this, but on an annual basis, we do want to review this. We didn't review it last year, so I'm going to put it on the calendar for every year, every January. We talk about it. Is there any changes to be made?
Okay. Okay, it has been moved and seconded that the resolution of 104-2018 be adopted, subject to the friendly amendment to clarify that the old resolution is being completely replaced by this one. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion is carried. Now, action item on the agenda is Kitsap County's determination of a de minimis for the Washington Boulevard Corridor Improvement Project. And Jim, would you explain that one for us, please?
So as you know, we've been working with Kitsap County for over a year on how we work together on Washington Boulevard Park and their street improvements. And staff has figured that out. I mean, we know what we're doing. They are seeking money from the Federal Highway Administration. And because of that, the Federal Highway Administration needs a letter from the port that basically says we are aware that they're going to be doing street improvements adjacent to our property, and actually on our property, because they will be putting in our 12-foot sidewalk. And that we realize that the effect of that will be de minimis, that there really won't be any. But we're acknowledging the fact that we are aware that they are going to come in and rip that street up in 2019. You know, from a staff-to-staff perspective, we understand this, but we didn't check all the boxes. So we prepared this letter that the commissioner doesn't need to sign, really doesn't even need to authorize me. However, I'm asking for your authorization to sign this letter. And that it be done in open public session, so that the public is aware that this is happening and we're aware that there will be issues.
So that sidewalk now currently is scheduled on Kitsap County schedule to be torn up in 2019, and in 2018 we'll be basically building the park there.
So our park will be there, but the park will actually be about 18 inches higher than the street. And we're going to take that 12 feet where the sidewalk's going, and we're going to taper that off with gravel. So there'll be access to the park. And then when they come in 19, they will just move that gravel as a substrate for their street, and they will build right on top of that. So, but we're not paying for or need to plan for that sidewalk improvement, which is going to save us money in the long run.
when all is said and done, I know at one point we talked about various ways of trying to make the transition from the street up to the sidewalk gradual and for easier access. Did we come up with a method with the county to do that, or are we still stuck with a 6-inch curb or whatever the county code is?
It is still going to be a 6-inch curb. There will be access points for wheelchairs in the pedestrian pavilion, which will be all paved, so that will be access, but there'll be a curb right at the you said not going to be wheel stops. We got them to take out the wheel stops, which people trip on.
Progress. Are there any other questions for Jim on this topic?
I just wanted to understand the wheelchair access more clearly. You said that that is near the pavilion area?
Mm-hmm.
And which is in the park?
Look at the drawing. The wheelchair access is right here at the intersection, or just east of the intersection. That big area, there's a pavilion, a paved pavilion with pavers that has picnic tables on it. It's hard to see from this picture, but it's right in this area.
Okay, thank you.
And that's where handicapped access will be.
It's basically level with the ferry toll booths right now?
No, it's above that.
It's above it, okay. The corner.
Yeah, that sidewalk is
crane shot.
Yeah, that sidewalk is quite a bit higher.
And then once access is achieved up there, it will give access to the whole rest of the park there.
Great, thank you.
Any other discussion concerning the determination of de minimis?
No.
Is there a motion to authorize the executive director to sign the letter as presented?
Motion to authorize the executive director to sign the letter as presented.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carried. Okay, next on the agenda is what we hope everyone is here to share with their opinions about. This is a discussion for options for leasing or transferring the terminal facility for the Kitsap Transit passenger-only ferry. Jim, maybe a good place to start would be if you would walk us through some of the ideas that have been kicked around, some of the pros and cons of the options, and how do we figure out where to go?
So as you're aware, Kitsap Transit is planning to start passenger ferry service here. They're still looking at Labor Day, but sometime in September is when the date is. There needs to be, from my estimation, about $1.2 to $1.5 million of improvements to the dock facility before that service can start. So John Kloss and I have been working together trying to come up with an agreement that really works along with Kitsap Transit and also will work for the port, our port district, and our port taxpayers. And that's where we're having the problem. I can say this up front, that one of the things we're struggling with is the Port of Kingston population base is very small. We have 4,000 people in our district. Those 4,000 people own this facility, and those 4,000 people are expecting some type of return on their investment for that facility. The Kitsap Transit fast ferry is actually going to serve not only Kitsap County, but a greater regional opportunity. So the question always comes to, can 4,000 people in the Port District of Kingston support and or subsidize the region? So that's the first question. John and I worked on a lease arrangement, although he did more out of it. His attorney actually put it together. You're all privy to that. You have a copy of it, in which he suggests that he will pay for those improvements of $1.3 million in exchange for 75 years of free rent. So that's his theory, that if I pay this $1 million, we will credit my rent for the next 75 years out of that money. He's also agreed to pay for all of the maintenance and improvements on the dock over the years. And if the port should perform those services, we would get a 10% markup on any of those services. So if we hired a contractor, he would pay that bill plus 10%. We've had several discussions about this. There is a desire, I think, of some commissioners and some public I've talked to that we should be getting some kind of fair market rent for our facility to be determined. There are three options on the table we've discussed. One is an outright lease, in which the RCW is an outright lease, say we will get fair market value for this facility. Because we're dealing with another government, we have the option of doing an interlocal agreement with that government. The interlocal agreement would allow us to do things for other considerations besides just rent and money. The third thing that I discussed with our attorneys this week is that in order for the port to sever itself from some liability, maybe we should look at surplusing the dock and just selling it to Kitsap Transit, and they can do all the improvements, run it, and it would be their dock. With a reversionary clause, should the passenger ferry ever go out of business, that the port would have first right of refusal to buy that facility back. Those are the things we're talking about. In the investigation and with our attorney, I realized Kitsap Transit went 75 years. Because the ferry dock is on a port management agreement piece of land, the land is owned by the Department of Natural Resources, that we can only lease structures over a PMA, if you will, for 35 years maximum. So whatever we do, if we're going to maintain ownership, we can only do an agreement for 35 years maximum.
Does that include options
yes.
for extension?
Yes. So that's the maximum. So I wanted to have an open discussion with the public and the commission to talk about perceptions on how you would like me to move forward with Kitsap Transit and negotiating something that's fair for our community, fair for the region, fair for Kitsap Transit. Their reasoning on the $1.5 million is simple. They have a lot of access to capital funds. Capital money is easy for them to get. Operational money is very difficult for them to get because the fare box or the fares they collect from the fast ferry, at least for the first few years, are not going to pay for operations. So they're going to have to pull that from bus revenues or some other revenue to make operations work. So they really want to do as much as they can on a capital basis versus an operating basis.
Their source of funds is a levy. It's tax return. Okay.
So they feel they're using that levy, at least from what I understand, they're using that levy to purchase vessels right now because the FTA is questionable whether they're going to fund these vessels. So not only the Finest, which is coming to Kingston, and the upgrade of the Finest is being paid for with local dollars. And I think I read in the paper that local dollars is $19 million a year, I think is what that is. But they'll probably spend that in vessels and backup boats.
Just for the benefit of those of you here that haven't been privy to our earlier discussions on our Tuesday morning work sessions, some of the issues that have been kicked around are some of the points, I should say, and in no particular order. A sale, outright sale, is a nice, clean, simple way to do it. It eliminates a lot of negotiating over, or one could say haggling over how certain things will be done. And it gives us a pot of funds. I don't know how much. We have no idea at this point what that amount would be that we could take elsewhere and do other things. On the downside, we're selling a port asset that is a unique asset and irreplaceable asset because the odds of being able to create another dock, another overwater structure, are very slim. So that, you know, that's kind of the downside to that. One of the other issues that I think we've kicked around is that the only thing we know for sure is that 75 or 35 or even 20 years from now, things will be very different. We have no idea what will be the mass transit mode at that point, or for that matter, the mass transit need. So trying to figure out how to build that into a sale versus a lease versus an interlocal agreement is complex. I didn't invite either of the other two commissioners to bring up other issues that we've kicked around. We haven't resolved anything. We've just identified a lot of issues.
Well, I think we talked a fair amount about the importance of flexibility and the ability to revisit the terms and the actual experience and how that might change our how we're interacting, and particularly around the issue of others' use of that facility, because there are other potential uses that could be, I think, interleafed with the passenger ferry landings and departures. So, and that, I think the original draft we got from Kitsap Transit didn't really allow for that level of flexibility, but I think we talked a fair amount about the importance of it, there being early and periodic reviews of the experience, and then how would that fit into a sale? If you did a sale, how would you maintain that kind of flexibility in operational review? So I think that was a topic that I'm
There's an opportunity cost to us in terms of if we were to. Let me back up just one thing that when we met with John Clausen 10 days ago or so, he outlined a point for me that I hadn't considered, which is Coast Guard security requirements for a mass transit facility like the passenger-only ferry. Because it's a larger boat than they originally planned, there will have to be a covered security clearance waiting area just outside of the gerbil tubes. And as part of their operational startup, Kitsap Transit needs to create an approved security plan for that entire facility from that point all the way through and on to the boat. So they need to have maximum control over all of that in order to be able to maintain 24/7, 365 security. We had kicked around some ideas of if there was a second use, another operator that came to us and wanted to use that facility. We wanted to be able to encourage that, but having it subject to the need of security to be able to not breach any of the Kitsap Transit security. So it's a complex issue. Laura, did you have any points you want?
Yeah, it's recognizing that there might be some avenues that we can explore with the MARSAC security for other vessels, but we haven't explored any of those yet. It's kind of an up-in-the-air thing right now, but we really want the community's input on this. We want to know what you think, because the port is owned by all of us. It really is.
Terry?
What portion of the dock are you talking about? Clear back to where it meets the ground, or?
Yeah. So the wooden portion going up to the containers, it was funded with RCO dollars, and it needs to be open to the public in perpetuity. So that's out of the question. That can't be owned by anyone. That is owned by the port, but has to be open to the public at all times.
Isn't that where the MARSAC will be, though?
No, it's where the wooden platform actually widens out before it goes into the containers.
Okay.
So that's where we would be the holding area for people if the level increased. But certainly from the containers to the boat is the security portion we're looking at.
Chip, is the MARSEC security going to involve people having to be checked through like you do at the airport?
It goes to one.
Every day?
Now, in talking to their consultants who are doing their security plan, they check with Washington State Ferries, and only once in 3 years has that been elevated to that point. Because you can walk on Washington State Ferries at a time. So the chances of that happening are fairly remote. But yeah, if it happens, they need to be able to do that.
Okay, so it's really to create a facility to do it, not necessarily to start the practice.
Yes, sir.
Why was the terminal built in the first place? Why was it built? What purpose was it intended to serve when it was constructed?
So it was built, I want to say, 12 years ago. Combination of work from the port and a company called Aqua Express. So Aqua Express was a consortium of three owners, I believe. It started a passenger ferry. It operated for 28 months, I believe, and went out of business. A couple years later, the port took over and started a service, and it went out of business after 30 months. So the models have been tried, but it was recognized the only way it's going to work is have a government subsidy. So the Kitsap initiative that passed last November allows 0.3% on every retail sale to go to passenger ferry. And that's allowed this to be a system that's actually sustainable now.
Second question. Economically, would it be a good thing to Kingston to have this walk-on ferry service? Is that a positive?
Well, my electives, yes.
Well, I'll fall back on my the thing I always say is one person's economic development is another person's urban sprawl. It really is depends on how you look at it. A big part of the port's charge is economic development. And as a body, the commission, when this was going on the ballot, I believe we passed a resolution supporting the 0.3% sales tax to pay for it. We see, I think, and feel free to contradict me, but we do see the passenger-only ferry as something that will help Kingston grow and stabilize. The trick always is to make that growth the kind of growth people want, and getting people to agree on what they want, of course, is a challenge, but as opposed to becoming another Silverdale. We look at the downtown, the lower Main Street area that has so many empty storefronts and rotating businesses, and the thing I've heard over and over from different consultants and business people is that in order to have a viable commercial center in town, we need to have more residents living close by. I don't know how many of you were at the session last night right here in this room with a developer that's planning 140 townhomes on Lower Lindvog up here. That's totally outside of our scope of things, of jurisdiction, anything we can do about. But people living there will spend money here. And as a commuter to downtown myself, I know that even though I bought lunch downtown, I bought everything else out here. So I really do think that it will be economic development for the community if that passenger-only ferry becomes a viable and stable service. Does that address your questions?
In other words, the net of it is it's a positive economic development to the city.
That's my perception.
Is the is Kitsap Transit saying to the port that the ferry would be the new ferry service would be predicated on reaching a workable agreement with the port for the terminal?
Well, I think.
Because without a terminal, you can't
right.
have
and you, would just, you answered your own question. We are the only game in town.
Right.
We own the Washington State Ferry lot. And we own the passenger ferry terminal. So they really don't have a lot of options. However, I personally, because I have to deal with Kitsap Transit all the time, this needs to be good for all of us.
Right.
And we need to work together. So we're trying to come up with a solution that they can live with and we can live with and services the region. But I think they've already committed. Service is coming here this fall. We just need to figure out how to make that work.
Okay.
you know, we're kind of a strange scenario. They need us and we want them, but we just have to figure out how to make all that fit. I'm sorry, gentlemen over here, and then you.
Mike?
Yes, sir.
Well, first of all, Jim, gets that transit sold to Ferry to lead the voters with a bunch of promises and stuff that was supposed to happen. A number of those things haven't happened as it comes to fact. They haven't made an agreement with King County to run it with their promises and several other things. So I'd say, first of all, my opinion is they haven't proven that this is going to be a viable thing anyway. So if the court is going to spend money upgrading that, what you have, that, I don't know how much that's estimated to be, if you've determined that yet, or even what their needs are. But that's an important thing there, because you're going to have to spend that money up front. And their track record so far is pretty unreliable, in my opinion. They should be, first of all, I don't think you should consider necessarily selling it to them, because you don't know where they're going to be in 5 years. I think, personally, you might consider somewhat of a short-term agreement to see how they're going to, if they can really make the darn thing fly. And you should be risking a lot of quartz money betting on the come that they're going to be able to make it happen. They don't have very high credibility, in my opinion.
So, thanks, John. We need about $1.5 million to fix the terminal, and they've agreed to pay for that. They're willing to write that check for $1.5 million once we get it.
And you'll still own it.
Yeah. We'll still own it. Yeah. So that's an option. What they don't want to pay for is a monthly fee. After they spend that, they want to basically have use of that in perpetuity, or for, they're asking 75 years. But they're willing to write that check. They're not asking us to do it. Well, what needs to happen, just an outline for all of you. You know, the barge has been in the water for 12 years now. It's supposed to be pulled every 5 years. So that barge needs to go to Seattle, get sandblasted, painted, refurbished. The container holding area is in desperate need of remodel. The windows leak, the roof leaks. Structurally, it's okay, but it needs a total renovation. They are looking to go through 1,000 gallons of fuel a day, which is good news for the port, because we would get a percentage of those fuel sales. However, they need fuel lines that run out 900 feet to the dock. So between sewage, fuel, renovation of the containers, and the float itself, or the barge, it's $1.3 million, plus or minus. So what we're looking for is agreement, and they promised me that they would write the check to do that.
It seems to me that the fact that they are willing to write check to do the upgrade, and you don't really have to sell them the terminal. To me, it comes down to what's the right length of time for the lease. You know, maybe 75 years is too long. You know, would they accept a much shorter lease term, 20 years? We can calculate what the monthly lease would be. You know, you take that 1.5, divide it by 20 years. And there's got to be a number that is workable on both sides without having the port to sell a hard asset. Because like this lady said, you don't really know what the future will be home. Once you sell it, you never own it back. And to me, if you can strike a deal on the length of the lease that is reasonable and they are willing to pay for the upkeep, that seems like an attractive arrangement.
I'm sorry, the lady here, I'm sorry.
I was a little concerned about the location of the ferry, the dock that the ferry was coming into, the same as these day ferries, correct?
No. It's where the red boat is now.
Because being just coming to a couple of the meetings, they said that they had anticipated it coming into where the ferries were coming. and now this is going to the other dock.
They are, they're designing new boats, and the new boats will have a bow loader capability, which means the front of the boat goes down and can load passengers. If that happens, it will allow them to go into Washington State Ferry's dock.
Yes.
The question is Washington State Ferry going to let them do that? Well, especially in the summer when they're running a lot of boats back and forth, there's a question to whether the passenger ferry can operate out of there. Regardless, they need a spot to keep the boat overnight. So whatever they do with Washington State Ferries, they are still going to have to deal with Port Kingston to tie up the boat overnight, or two boats, which they're asking to do.
My understanding was that they were purchasing a boat in November.
Well, they purchased the boat already, and it's on its way here from New Jersey.
Yes.
It should be here, they said, the 1st of February. It's going into renovations for 4 months, so it'll be totally stripped and redone for 4 months, ready for inaugural service by the 1st of September. They are looking to lease a second boat to have here as a backup boat. Should that go down, then the reason will be backup.
And they are currently working in negotiations with King County Marine Services to operate the whole...
So those negotiations broke off about 2 months ago.
Okay.
They have hired a new ferry manager, Darrell Bryan, who's...
Who hired?
Kitsap Transit did.
Okay.
Darrell Bryan's a long-term ferry operator and owner of companies. He has reopened negotiations with King County, and they're making progress. But their goal is... King County to run their ferry system.
And operate and maintain. And so in the future, if you did go, if it did happen, you would be in negotiations with King County Marine Services.
No, we're looking to negotiate with Kitsap Transit. They would be the leaseholder. King County would merely be their operator. So there would be their agent. And there would be an agent-owner relationship there. And they would have that in case down the road, if they wanted to switch operators to someone else, the lease would still be in place for Kitsap Transit.
I don't know very much about the port. I've lived here for a long time, and I don't go to your meetings. This is my first meeting.
Welcome.
But I do represent a development down on Lindbaugh Road, and I know the impact of what is going on because I work with the people coming over from Seattle to buy over here, and they are buying over here because of that ferry and the future of that ferry coming into our marketplace. I'm not a lawyer, I'm just a real estate agent that doesn't even have a license in this town, it's as in Seattle. But when I just glance at your numbers and I hear that the kids have transit push for the fast ferry, and watching it's in the meeting that was last night, and the implications of the traffic, the impact of the Washington State Fair is going up 25% last year in a ridership, I think it was, the implosion of the people coming into this area. I just hope that in the future that King County starts participating with our county in those manners. And is that a pursuit at all? Because it's because of that load coming and bearing on our load, where are we working with them to implement help? As a taxpayer saying that, because it seems like we kind of are taking a little bit of front here when they're coming from that side. And I love it that they're coming. You know, it's great that they're coming. You know, we do need the growth. We do need the infrastructure here. And the people that are coming want it. But they could share a little bit from King County into our services. Is that open to you with King County?
It's all open to us. We are not right now negotiating with King County, but it's a great idea.
Why, you know, to me, because it's the ridership is coming from King and Snohomish County, why aren't they helping the poor in sharing part of the income, you know, from what, you know, they're bringing them here. How come they're not sharing it? That's the dumb question I have.
Not a dumb. The perception is that the ferry will serve the peninsulas, both the Olympic and Kitsap Peninsula, more than it will service King County. So it's our people going there to work and then coming back here to live.
I heard that with Washington State Ferry, and they did say that, but that is not. They don't come over here just for recreation.
Right.
They are coming over here for, it's not just recreation. So I think that stipulation of calling it that is not correct. Because it's more fulfilled, it's a lot more than recreation.
Sure.
It's use.
Recreation
is
function,
right?
For those of us who like to go to Seattle downtown, it's a hassle right now. I have to drive on the ferry, and then have a fight I-5 traffic. If I want to go see the Mariners or the Seahawks, maybe someday we'll get into the playoff again. the walk on ferry makes it a lot easier for Kingstonians to go visit Seattle downtown. Mm-hmm. So it goes both ways, the benefit.
I think, Ron, you had your hand up a minute ago, did you?
There's a lady back there, too.
Is it your intent after this meeting to make a decision? Because if we do, then I've got some problems. You built me half a deck here. You've got the agreements in front of you. You've got the discussions with Clawson. I'd like to see a whole lot more before you guys make a decision. Then I can go through a whole stream of questions for you that I don't know if you can answer it here. I'd like to know the economics of you guys buying it and leasing it. I'd like to know the fair value. I can go on and on and on. Are you going to make a decision based on this meeting here?
No.
Good.
there is short answer, you know, straight direct question, short answer. We do not have any kind of an agreement to approve at this point. We're still way back in the preliminary phase of trying to figure out what kind of agreement we want the lawyers to draft up for us.
So what do you want from us? You guys have the agreement right in front of you. We don't, unless it was handed out. What are you going to give us so that we can make a better input to you? It's based on something more than just, you know, generalities. I want to see facts. I want to see options. I want to see the monetary impact. And I'm only one. Let's see, only one of my 10. And there's 4,400 of us. Mm-hmm. Is that what you said? And there's going to be a whole lot more. Give us some facts so that we can help you make the right decision.
Yeah, I think at this point what we're looking for is conceptually, you know, what does the community want? Is the community interested in, for example, selling this asset and buying another asset over there? Does the community think that's a good idea or a bad idea? Does the community think that a lease is a good idea or a bad idea? And the actual deal terms and prices and costs, we haven't talked about any of that other than the estimate of $1.3 to $1.5 million to do the work. They're going to write the check for that. They have some ideas about how to account for it. We have some ideas about how to account for it. But it's all tied up with, you know, what does the community think about the direction we ought to be going?
How can we comment when we don't know what the facts are? I mean, if you sell it for $50 million, that's probably off the top, say, go ahead and sell it. But that's not enough. I mean, tell us what we need in order to tell you what we think. I don't want to sell it unless I know what it is. And you're not telling us that, Bruce.
Well, we don't know.
McIntyre.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But there is no price on the table. Nobody's talked about price. It would have to be appraised, and the assumption would be fair market value, whatever that is. How much would it cost to build that dock now from scratch, if you could do that?
So are you going to give us those numbers when you get it appraised?
Well, if we go that direction, if we start investigating, of course, that will all be in public meeting. We'll have lots more discussions about that.
Well, then I'm only one of 4,400 people. I'm not there yet to tell you what I think.
Okay.
Are we going to be, in just in the future, are you going to be able to make these decisions before this? If the boat is supposed to arrive and start transporting in September, that comes very fast.
Our goal is the next 30 days to have an agreement worked out.
Okay.
One of the things we wanted this meeting for, and I'm sorry more people didn't show, is we didn't want a perception of a backroom deal between two governments. We want this wide open and transparent. So we really want everybody to know, or anyone wants to know, what we're thinking so we can move this forward.
We want to get the options out there so that people know that we have more than one option here, and we want to know what you think.
When will you take it to the public, what your options, what their options are?
So what we'll do is, once the commissioners give me some direction on, you know, I don't want to sell it, and work on an interlocal agreement, work on a lease, whatever, then I'll work with the lawyers to draft something. At that point, it'll be a public document, and all of you can read it. We'll put it on our website so you can all see it before we make that decision.
Good. The lady over here has been trying to get our attention here.
Oh, that's okay. Well, since you want the board members' input, and I know this is when you meet, but a 1 o'clock meeting that we just kind of heard a one-off on in the newspaper and on, you know, the community board, you're not going to get the input. Most of us can't be here today, because we don't have fast gear to walk on and make it easy to see out. But, so I would hope that before you make your decision, that you would maybe use the community news to implore people to speak up, so that you get more than 10 people's opinion. I mean, I can tell you that I think it would be an economic mistake to sell it outright, because it is a mutual benefit at this point. And we don't know, as several people have said, what's going to happen down the line. And as successful that as it will be, I'm sure, in the end, I don't think the port will ever be sold it. Even if you had first right refusal, I doubt you'd ever be able to economically make it up and purchase it 20 years, 75 years down the line. But I think if you really want the port members to give opinion, you really have to do more outreach at this point. Because it's just by happenstance that we realize what was on your agenda. And I'm sure a lot of people don't even actually look at agendas. So I would encourage you to try to get the word out, maybe, and tell people please write.
How did you guys hear about the meeting?
I saw it on a Friends of Fast Ferry Facebook webpage.
Okay.
And that's how I found out about it.
How did you hear about it?
Terry Aslett, email.
Okay. How did you hear about it?
I saw an email. It wasn't from Facebook. I think it was a Kitsap County email. Is where I found it.
Okay. And you saw the sign?
I heard. I know.
I saw you out there looking at it.
I hear you. We need to do a better job of outreach, and we will do that. And I think the other thing that we didn't include in the outreach is that email responses, you know, you don't have to attend the meeting. Shoot us an email and tell us your thinking.
Yeah, and so maybe you could let people know that.
Yeah, great idea. All
right. Yes.
I'll tell you what. I'll make you a deal. I don't want to see you sell it, but if you guys decide to sell it, I'll make you a deal. There's a number of us around here that will buy it. We'll just buy it. Okay? Tell us the price. Do not sell it to Kitsap Transit or anybody else unless you really open it up and let the community buy it. I'm serious. Bruce, I'm serious.
I hear what you're saying.
Okay.
Anyway.
Don't sell at Bart.
A Bart.
Well, I call it a Bart. It's the terminal. It is just a Bart.
We've heard a great deal about wanting to lease and not sell, but Are there implications if we lease this and how we lease this that it might impact our other folks who lease homes like WSDOT?
Well, that was one of the issues that came up with Kitsap Transit's first proposal, which was that they would do $1.5 million worth of, you know, for want of a better term, call it tenant improvements, and then apply that back against lease over a period of time, which is not an uncommon commercial real estate concept. However, if you go right across the road there, Washington State Ferries built at least $1.5 million, probably more like $15 million worth of improvements there, and they still pay us about what, $15,000 a month in
$200,000 a year.
Yeah, $200,000 a year in rent payments. So, kind of what we threw back to Kitsap Transit was, we can't do just a give you the facility, let you improve it, and then you get all the benefits of the improvement because you're the only one that's using it. And so they have indicated that they recognize that point, sort of we recognize their security issues, and they're willing to work with us on an ongoing stream of payments. It's got to be something that their cash flow can support given their startup costs. And so that's the first thing that comes out to me about how these things, you know, cross impact. Jim, you may have spotted some others.
No, I mean, I think that's true. There's a lot of things, you know, we have four major lease tenants, and the commissioners last month approved a $35,000 roof for the yacht club. So they're leasing the facility from us. The roof is in bad shape, needs replacing, but it's $35,000. So the question I have is, if we lease this to Kitsap Transit, who's going to replace the roof? Are they going to come to us and say, wait a minute, the roof's leaking, or the dock's sinking, or the gangway doesn't work, or who's going to be responsible for those items? Is it going to be a traditional tenant-landlord responsibility, or are they going to take complete responsibility for all maintenance? So those are the things that needs to be worked out in a lot of details.
That's why you need lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
I can respond to that gentleman's question. I haven't agreed with him that for us to provide meaningful input to the commissions, it would be nice to know what the appraised value is of the dock. Is it $1 or is it $10 million or $50 million? Now, I also understand the port is not thinking about selling it out of the blue. This is motivated by transit, Kitsap Transit wanting to put a faster service to that dock, to that terminal, right? So it's not like you're looking for a buyer to sell the terminal. So I don't think what you are proposing for the neighborhood to buy it is what the Port Commission is looking for.
And one of the issues, what prompted the entire selling discussion was limiting liability. So if we have 10 people in the park, 100 people in the park, it's not bad. We're talking 10,000 people a year walking down that facility. And if one of them trips, falls, breaks their neck, dies, the port's going to be sued by that family. So is that a liability we want to incur? We're going to require that Kitsap Transit has insurance, but we all know how that goes. The property owner is still going to be on for any kind of liability. So that's a worry of ours.
What's the difference between going down there as going down to Mike Wallace Park or stepping down those stairs and everything? What's the difference?
So
there's no difference. You're liable for every piece of property you own. So why are you carving this out as
Because, Ron, you've taken the passenger ferry when it's blowing 30 miles an hour and that dock is moving 6 feet up in the air, loading a boat in rough sea conditions is a dangerous operation.
Boy, I hope we don't have an earthquake because you're going to have the same problem down there in the park. I mean, let's worry about stuff like that.
It'd be increased traffic as well. I mean, you're talking about a lot more people, mm-hmm. which would
Yeah, I think just using Jim's number, there are 10,000 people a year that wouldn't otherwise be down in the park are now walking out on the dock and getting on and off the ferry. And the going back to your comment about the lawyers, they're going to earn their money on this one because they have to draft us the most ironclad indemnification provision that you've ever seen. But I also know that no matter how ironclad the indemnification provisions are, when somebody gets ready to file their lawsuit, the landowner is just sort of like an automatic one to get sued, even if someone else has to step in and take pick up the burden. So it's really a question of, we know we can't get totally out of that, but it is an issue we have to be thinking about. And if we're doing the repair on the dock, then that, no matter how good the indemnification provision is, if we botched a repair job and somebody gets hurt, we're back on the hook. So it's a lot of give and take there, I guess.
Excuse me, maybe I misheard, but I thought you said that this Washington State Ferries was also a leasee. So I'm sure you have the same concerns with them, and especially since it's vehicle loading, and so there are other issues. So we kind of have a template, I think, to help guide you, correct or not?
It's a little different in that the state indemnifies. The state is a little bigger than the port and a little bigger than Kitsap Transit.
Yeah.
So they're self-insured. So it's a little different in a state operation than it is a small transit agency in Kitsap County. But yes. But the Washington State Ferry is a little more substantial a vessel than the one that's going to be operating on your passenger.
Yes, that's true.
Yes, sir.
Jim, going back to my comment about credibility, gets that transit. How much credibility is there in there, that estimate of there is 1.3 to 1.5? Are they just going to write a check and then that's it? Or are they going to sign their own contracts for that? If it winds up at $2 million, they're still.
So that's still under negotiation. That's one of the points we're talking about. They asked me when we first started this 6 months ago to come up with ideas that improvements were necessary. So I actually went out and bid those projects just to see what those numbers were. And that's what came out, the 1.3. I think we're pretty close, but I think the devil's in the details when you do the agreement that says the provisions for change orders, if there's a change order for any reason, that they would be responsible.
Or other overruns, something. It seems to me I read recently comments you made in the paper or something about the obligation that you have to the people who live in the taxpayers of the port district versus Kitsap Transit. Given that, I don't see why we should, why the port is particularly, should be giving them any good guy deals in any way, shape, or form. They came up with that business plan of theirs to sell it to the taxpayers of the whole county. And parts of it have turned out to be, at least in my mind, smoke and mirrors so far. I don't see, and that's how it got passed. I don't see where we really, as an entity here, owe them any considerations for their faulty estimates or plans that they used to sell the bond issues to people. So I don't think you can reach the fortune cut on any slack. You get fair market value for anything that was done there.
Well, if it's a lease,
good ideas.
If it's a lease, the RCWs require us to charge fair market value. So there is no way around that.
Say that again, Jim. I couldn't.
If it's a lease, the RCWs require us to get fair market value for that.
The same as would apply to the Washington State Ferry.
But if it's an interlocal agreement, we'd have more wiggle room to do that.
So how long is the lease for the Washington State Ferry parking lot down there that you get $200,000? Is that a 2-year, 5-year deal?
No, I think there's,
you just redid it.
Oh, it was redone in about 2006. Does that sound right?
That sounds right.
Yeah, and it had like a 20-year term on it with another 20-year option.
Unilateral.
Yeah, the option belongs to Washington State Ferries. They have the option to.
So that's a 20-year lease.
So there's another. I think, as I recall, it goes well out to 2030s before that's up again.
So I don't know why we can't do something similar to Kitsap Transit. And I'm not at all sure, just by the way, that you're getting a fair value for that parking lot, the holding lot, and I can show you why, but
And I don't disagree with you, but remember, when you're negotiating with Washington State Ferries, you're negotiating with a 900-pound gorilla, and they do have the ultimate ability to condemn the property if we don't reach a lease agreement. So
I'm not going to call John Cross of a 900-pound.
Thank you.
But Kitsap Transit is a big organization. It's not just a little junior bus walking around here. They've got money. They can indemnify. They can do a lot.
Oh, sure.
I mean, the worst thing you can do is end up owning a county.
I think it's important to me to remind us, myself, that the sell lease interlocal agreement isn't about necessarily the slickest or smartest deal for us. It is about the deal that works best for both parties, because we want passenger ferry in this community. And that we, as a public agency, I feel, have some responsibility to the larger county and region to do our part to make this work. I don't want it to hurt us, but I also feel that we're needing to not just try to push them to the wall as hard as we can. I think it has to work for all of us. And it's a very complicated deal. Operationally, it's complicated. Financially, it's complicated. Legally, it's complicated. And we have to find the best possibility.
I think that's part of the reason why we've come up with different options.
Yep.
There isn't just, okay, we're going to go this way. We're expanding. We're looking into other things, trying to figure out what's the best.
I totally agree. And Kitsap Transit and the POF is a good thing for Kingston. But I also look at that terminal as being very precious. And you know, because I've often kind of indicated that. I mean, we can open up that terminal for other POFs that want to come down from Mukilteo and bring the Boeing employees back and forth. We have a new airline going in at Payne Field. That's a quick way to get from here to there. There is a dock at Mukilteo and a quick way up to Payne Field. Everett used to have the Navy going back. There's a lot of opportunity besides Kitsap Transit. And I fully agree that Kitsap Transit's important. You ought to help them. But let's keep the door open so we can take advantage of the other things. We're in a beautiful place. We're right in the middle of everything. Right, we can get, when we were in Colfax, we talked about bringing a ferry from Port Townsend down here on the way to Seattle. That terminal is precious. So let's not lock ourselves in totally with Kitsap Transit. They don't need the other side of that dock. They really don't. And we ought to be able to use it for other purposes when it's appropriate. So if you sell it to Kitsap Transit, or you make that 7-year lease or 20-year lease, you're going to lose out on a lot of opportunities that are coming down the road. I've said
thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
I'll go
away. Well, a comment I'd make about that is that the opportunities aren't just financial. And I as we've gone through this whole process, we kind of go back and forth between the finance side of it and the functional side. I see the opportunities that are inherent in the dock as being way beyond just our ROI. It's the whole community opportunities, the whole region opportunities. So I agree with you about that.
Any other comments? comment from the public. Thank you all, and I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to thank the others that were here too, but if you speak to them.
Yeah. Do we know if they signed in?
Nobody was signed in for public comment.
Okay. Because I didn't know any of them.
No.
Except John.
Next on the agenda is commissioner reports. Start with our newest commissioner.
Attending different meetings around town, really enjoyed. I've been going to the Kingston Cares meetings. They're a really nice group that concentrates on feeding kids and helping homeless people. There's the Project Connect that's happening this tomorrow here at the Village Green from 10 to 2, I believe it is. That should be a really good opportunity. If you know anybody that is having difficulty or needs to explore outside resources for, they said even haircuts or shopping or anything, just let them know that this opportunity is happening. The meeting we attended last night, I think all three of us were there, that was a really good meeting about that new facility, the new housing project that's going, not project, new housing area that's going in on Lynn Bog Road. I think that's a good thing. And I think that the builder was trying to be very accommodating. I was very impressed with how Kingston responded to him. I was very impressed. I was expecting fireworks, and they weren't there, and I think that's really good. People responded in a real positive manner. We all still have questions, but I think it was a really good thing. So that's what I have to say.
I don't have a report beyond the importance of last night's presentation by the developer for the, what is it, Seaside?
Seaside. That's what it's called.
I'm working with the housing group, so I have some understanding of their reaction, and I think many people's reaction to what increased property values do for the people in the community who are part of our community who can't afford the increases, let alone, you know, maybe even worse than that. So I think we've got some hard questions to ask ourselves as a community. And one of the things I would point out in terms of events and process and opportunities to explore where we're going is a workshop, a community conversation workshop on February 24th here from 8:30 to 1 that is focused on inviting as wide a net as possible people to come and talk about what does Kingston need at this point. Is it housing? Is it education for high schoolers, for the trades? Is it a welcome wagon? I mean, what is it we need to be doing? And we all sit and talk about our little piece, but I think this is potentially an opportunity for people to get a bigger perspective about what's about to come. So I would invite everyone. There will be flyers all over the place at some place pretty soon. And I guess that was my report.
Okay.
Come one, come
Thank
all.
night before last, I went to the Kitsap All Ports meeting up in Brownsville. The program that was scheduled was not particularly long or detailed. It was a representative from Kitsap County Parks Department, and they're trying to build an inventory of the countywide recreation open spaces, and they were asking for input on that, acknowledging that they had no funds to do anything with. They just wanted to be able to sort of catalog all the opportunities that are out there and make that information available. The most important thing that I noticed from that meeting was that there were, as a representative from Bremerton was there for the first time ever since I've been going. One of the new commissioners from Poulsbo was there. which it's been a while since Postal has participated. There were two new commissioners from Illahee, so you had the entire three commissioners there. I still wish that the moderator could run those meetings a little more tightly, but that's just his personality, so we get along with that. But anyway, I think that's a good way to network with the other ports and keep track of what's going. Now, the Water Trails Festival has been canceled for this year. You may remember that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Due to lack of funding, lack of county funding. I think that was handled primarily by Silverdale, and the county in their funding didn't put any funding in it, and Silverdale Chamber and Silverdale Port simply said they couldn't continue to support it. So I guess that's what has become of that. Let's see, I went to the Chamber board meeting the other morning. Nancy Martin's the new president of the Chamber. They still have a couple openings on their board, if you know of anybody who might be interested. And that was pretty much it for that.
I did have one other thing I wanted to, it isn't particularly port related, but I heard last night from someone in the audience who's seems pretty credible in our world, Rick Lanning, that the county is about to, has in fact effective already banned, disallowed single family dwelling units in the urban village core, which not only affects a lot of people who've got projects underway, but has a tremendous impact on the future, the look of the, and function of the community. And Rick said, and I put this out, this is here today, that there's been no discussion of it anywhere public. And
I heard that Bainbridge did that.
They've made a moratorium on any development, period.
Yes. Yeah. That's what
but
I heard.
This,
I
is, this says you can't build a single family house.
Okay.
The houses we all live in, you couldn't build those in the urban core.
Yeah. Urban core defined as?
I don't know the exact boundaries of the urban village core.
Urban village core, yeah, not the UGA. Yeah.
Where did
exactly.
you hear it?
What?
Where did you hear it from?
I don't know. He expect. I mean, he's very cued into all of that conversation through KCAC. But he said it hasn't even been discussed at KCAC. So I will explore it and let you know. But I mean, I've put up the process and the fact, kind of horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Did he share with you he's going forward with Belmont?
Pardon?
Did he share with you he's going forward with the Belmont project?
No, he didn't.
So that will be started in the next 6 months. So Belmont is right across from Washington Boulevard Park.
Yeah.
It's going to be a three-story building with four condos and retail and office underneath.
On his property.
Yeah, where he just paved the parking lot. I said, Rick, why did you pave the parking lot if you're going to build a building?
So where is this?
It's right across from Washington, right next to the Toll
Chamber. Oh, okay. Right where he had
the empty lot.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a three-story condos and retail mixed juice.
In permitting, he said he should have a permit here in the next couple of months.
Wow.
Any other commissioner? Points? Staff?
I've got a couple things. Terry and I are going to the boat show tomorrow afternoon to set up, and then I work first shift on Friday morning. So the boat show week is started, and should be fun. Your tickets, are you're in charge of getting them tickets?
They all have the exhibitor pass, so they will. There are maps showing the location of the booth. There is a copy of the sheet that shows your name listed as an exhibitor pass, and also a list of, you know, a schedule of all the events in the port office. If you'd like, I can get those to you.
So you have to go into the office and get your picture taken, get a badge, and then it's right next to the...
Not our office.
No.
What do you get?
Yeah, the boat show office. Yeah, that'll be exciting.
So I've left confused. Do we need to go into our office in order to...
Well, I wanted to ask you. I apologize. I realized when I sat down this meeting, I should have brought them with me. If you can pick them up, that's fine. If I need to deliver them someplace, that's fine, too. But those are three things I want you to have. The schedule, where the booth is located, and then a copy of the form that we gave the Convention Bureau that shows your list as an exhibitor.
Okay, thank you.
So tomorrow, the view from my office is going to be a lot better. Because at 11:35, the Red Boat will be leaving dock, going to Bellingham. Hopefully, I looked at my wind out, and it's supposed to be blowing 25 to 30 tomorrow, and I'm not... It'll be an interesting trip to Bellingham, but not my problem. We have the insurance, the bill of sales done. Juanita's got the money in the account. So we are still working with the FTA to finalize that aspect of it. The bill will be gone. On Friday, I'm hoping to start bids, go out to bid for Washington Boulevard Park. If not Friday, it'll be Monday. I got all the drawings, all the, everything from the engineer. So we're ready to advertise that, looking to have bids by the 20th of February in place. The sign's actually doing quite well, the Welcome to Kingston sign. We now have 7 sponsors. Each sponsor is paying $300, so it's $2,100 in income. We'll see how Juanita's got a separate category for expenses for the sign, so we'll be able to track how much our time and expenses are in the sign versus income, so we can see are we just about right in that $300 a year range or will that change. Yesterday I spent the day in Olympia, started out with a breakfast with quite a few senators and legislators. Our delegation didn't show up, so I didn't see Christine and/or Sherry. They were in session all day. There was like 5 bills getting dropped right away, so they were in session. But it was a great event. 10 to noon, I had my first executive committee meeting with the WPPA, which went really well. And I went back to the Capitol for more, just talking. We met with the treasurer, the state treasurer, and a few other people. It was an interesting event, and this is the first time I've ever been. And I would encourage you all next year to go to Fort Day, because I think it is beneficial. There were a lot of commissioners there, so. It was very good.
You did remind me of one very important thing from the All Ports meeting that I forgot to mention. The Black Boat is now in Port Angeles, or excuse me, in Port Orchard.
Port Orchard, yeah. So we need to remember that. I was thinking about coming into work today. If any of you remember seeing the Black Boat on its side at low tide, that side of the dock is not very deep. It's only 10 feet at a zero tide. So any boat that goes over there is going to be on the ground in a zero tide. Or at minus tide, it'll be really underground. So we need to keep that in mind. If it's a catamaran that only draws 3 feet, it's not going to be an issue. But if it's a regular displacement boat, it's not very deep there.
Before we adjourn, I would like to thank Sam for your service, intention.
Yeah. Do you want to? I was going to say we have need to get Juanita's thanks, but I also want to second the thanks to Sam for the excellent work she's done for us. And sorry to see you go, but Kingston, Brazil, Kingston, Brazil. Wait.
Right.
Safe travels.
Thank you. No, it's been a real honor to have been given the opportunity to not only work for the port, but to really experience such a symbiosis.
symbiotic community and agency. It put a lot of humanity into agency operations for me, and getting to know the community and the importance of the port's role in that community's daily lives. It really changed things for me, all for the better. It's provided me an experience that will stay with me for the rest of my life, and working with everybody at the port, from the commissioners to the staff, it's really filled my sails, and it's going to allow me safe passage to the next chapter of my life, and I'm grateful. So thank you.
Thank you. And welcome, Lisa.
Juanita, do you want to point out anything on the report here?
Yeah, Dennis did a really great job coming here in camp. But it was before I did it over, but in a different way. The first page is just the top and lot budget versus actual percentage tied with the income. Anything above 100%? Great. And expenses, anything below 50%, anything below 100% breaks up.
I'm sorry, I couldn't
hear. The grant we received in December.
Oh, okay.
That helped offset the consulting fees for the expenses. And then the last page is the top and last step stuff. It is the name that jumped out at me right away.
How much longer are we going to be dealing with the auditor? Yeah.
She sent an email earlier or late last week, and she already sent me her findings and notes. I just got to go through. So okay, well, she's not coming back to the office.
Okay.
Yes.
She sounds happy about
that. I need to have an office.
How's your office back?
Still fill the boxes back for us. But one thing to note that I did put in the profit and loss by class, I did add a reader board, just like Jim said, so we could keep track of the expenses of the reader board and report.
Good. I saw that. We had the electricity charge on there. Is that actual electricity or is that hookup?
That's okay.
Any other questions for Juanita?
I'm meeting with her Friday.
Okay, is there anything else to come before the board for the good of the order? Final public comment?
I wouldn't want to come all the way this without making comment. But the Kitsap Plan is much of a comprehensive plan. I think you're all aware of that. KCAP meeting on the February 7th, they're going to go through permitting Model 1. And you own the property in what's called the Urban Village Center. I think that's what Lanning is talking about, the core. And you guys are the people that are going to be most affected in parking, and you've all heard me talk about the parking impact when you're going to do the tent pad or anything else. I hope that the port takes the lead in running through the pros and the cons of changing the parking requirements. requirements of the county for the urban village center. I really think it belongs to the port, and I'm hoping the port steps up and takes the lead. Is that a fair? I request it. Not that I just think you ought to, I request that you do. Is that fair? It's going to start quickly, and
where's
it's going to be forever.
Where's
for
that
a long,
meeting,
long time.
Ron, where's that meeting?
KCAC will be here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not appropriate to be pushing, you know, that you want this parking or that parking or whatever yet, but it's important that you come to that meeting and stay, you know, in contact with Peter Best and the other commissioners to make sure that you get what you need to develop the tent pad or any of the other properties that you have, including, and by the way, the Urban Village Center, the way it's drawn out on the comp plan, includes the Hill property. They were kind of lazy in making their little triangles, but I'm not sure quite all of the properties that you own, but the downtown is the important part for you, the tent pad in particular. And that affects Lanning, too. I mean, Lanning will be right on your side trying to get that.
That meeting is at 7 o'clock on the 7th.
The Hill House can be very
7
valuable
o'clock
if you can't
the
build a
Thank
house
you.
In the Urban Village Center.
That's right.
Double the price.
Yeah.
He wants to build a single house down in the Urban Village Center and they're trying to help possible ways to build. I mean, no one's going to do that anyway. But I may be wrong. Maybe Lanning thinks that, you know, the whole GMU, which I can't believe.
He seemed very specific about it and had three pieces of property that he was trying to permit, had gone all the way through it. He said Wetter is affected, Arejito is affected, that there are a number of people that have single family proposals in place that are now dead. So that's what he said, and I think it's important.
It would really be nice if the community got together and went to the county as a group and said, here's what we need, and here's how we need to block our community with regard to our zoning. And I have preached and tried my best to get Mr. Gelder, Commissioner Gelder, and everybody else to start treating Kingston, our downtown area and our surrounding area, more like an incorporated town, so that we can be treated like a Bainbridge or a Paul's Bowl and have more input, because we are, even Silverdale tells us, we're next in line somewhere down the path to become incorporated. And we ought to be treated like that's going to happen someday, whether it's 5 years from now or 10 years, because it impacts what we're going to do now for the next umpteen years.
Thank you. Our next regular meeting will be Wednesday, February 28th at 1 p.m. here. Anything else from commissioners? Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye.